work to address structural inequalities. It is clear from our four key findings that the structural inequality embedded within our culture is reflected and reproduced in both the HE and FE systems and the contemporary arts sector through inadequate student support and guidance, unequal distribution of information and opportunities, unpaid and low-paid work, short-term contracts and funding allocation. The data also shows that the likelihood of and extent to which a graduate's professional development is negatively affected by any one of these factors is largely dependent on their socio-economic background, geographic location, caring responsibilities, disability, gender, race and/or sexual orientation. These factors also disadvantage graduates when trying to break into the sector, where, due to lack of funding for the arts, competition for opportunities is fierce. Interviewees working in major cities described an oversaturated job market, whilst those outside major cities reported a lack of opportunities in their local areas. It is clear that the current system pits early career artists against each other and privileges those with prior experience and existing cultural capital, contributing to elitism within the sector. We also found that graduates are working long hours in multiple low-paid or unpaid jobs, leading to burnout and taking a toll on mental health for those who do not manage to sustain their practice. The impact of COVID-19 and the cost of living crisis is prominent in the data, contributing to the financial hardship already experienced by many working in the sector. These findings reveal deep flaws in the notion of graduate employability and entrepreneurship. Viewing postgraduate success through the lens of employability assumes that we are living in a meritocratic society where individual merit is the measure of success, whilst failing to take account of how social structures affect the ability of graduates to establish and sustain a career in the sector. The data shows that the current social structures do in fact disadvantage graduates from marginalised groups, and suggests that unless we acknowledge and address the wider systemic issues affecting early career artists, the reproduction of normative systems of oppression and elitism within the sector will continue. The systemic nature of these issues will require education providers, funding bodies and local organisations to work together to mitigate these challenges. By making changes that support marginalised fine art graduates to overcome the barriers they face, we can make working in the contemporary arts sector fairer and more sustainable for all. In our opinion, this will necessitate a radical restructuring of fine art education through a process of examining the limitations and biases of the current curriculum and untangling fine art pedagogies from the legacies of colonialism, classism, sexism, heterosexism and ableism that have shaped them. It should also involve a continued commitment from HEFE institutions to address structural inequality before, during and after art school. Our data showed that HEFE outreach in the form of widening participation programmes for schools on the Scottish Index of Multiple Deprivation and Income Deprivation Affecting Children Index made access to college and university fairer for the working class students we interviewed. Continued and increased work in this vein could include part-time and remote study options, which when offered by institutions, made it possible for students in smaller towns and cities and those with caring responsibilities to continue their studies at HEFE level. Also highlighted in our data were the possibilities for addressing structural inequalities during study. Interviewees often reported that financial barriers limited their professional development. This could be addressed through the provision of access bursaries for materials, travel and caring responsibilities, as well as providing equal access to professional development opportunities which are either paid or offered as part of the course. Universities and colleges can also play a crucial role in enabling social mobility. Research conducted in 2023 by the Social Mobility Commission suggests that on average, studying for a qualification in both higher education, HE, and further education, FE, is associated with positive earnings returns. However, it is also showed there is a lot of variation across subjects, with fine art graduates earning considerably less than those from STEM subjects, as well as economics and law. In HE, graduate earnings also varied significantly by university type. More selective universities, such as the Russell Group, tended to correlate with higher graduate earnings than those universities in the post-1992 group. However, the Social Mobility Commission found that on average, the more selective universities also tended to be disproportionately less accessible to pupils from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. Students from a lower socioeconomic background were more likely to choose less selective universities and courses than students with similar grades from more privileged backgrounds. This is consistent with findings in the Universities and Social Mobility Report produced by the IFS and the Sutton Trust in 2012. Addressing this issue will involve more than improving access to higher education. It will require ensuring that all graduates are equipped with the practical skills they need to work in the sector. Our data shows that those from marginalised groups were impacted more significantly than those by a lack of practical skills, as they were unable to continue their creative practice if they did not obtain funding. A commitment from art schools to incorporate effective and comprehensive professional practice skills into their studio-based visual art degrees programme on a sustained and coordinated basis would go a long way towards mitigating the effects of class inequality on graduates' prospects. Our interviewees felt that this should be done through talks and lectures by artists and art workers who can offer practical advice as well as tutors. They emphasised the importance of interactive professional practice workshops, which give students the opportunity to ask questions and get feedback. Crucially, our data showed that the way professional practice is delivered has as much to do with how likely students are to internalise it as what is included in modules. Voluntary professional practice programmes, which do not earn students credit units towards their degree awards, signal to them that these skills are not valuable or important for life after art school. Consequently, attendance is quite patchy, especially as these modules are often delivered in the final year, when students are focused on finalising assessed creative work and working towards degree show. Much of the recent work published in Contemporary Art Theory highlights concerns regarding the instrumentalisation of art education by neoliberal government employability agendas. This is indeed cause for concern. However, graduates must nonetheless continue to operate within these systems. The question is, how can we help them to do this whilst resisting the privatisation and consumer-driven model of education? The acquisition of practical skills is distinct from the entrepreneurial ethos in the current Quality Assurance Agency for Higher Education Art and Design Subject Benchmark statement, which measures attainment by how well students demonstrate entrepreneurship. Learning how to complete tax returns, for example, is something artists can maintain as separate from their artistic identity, whereas being an entrepreneur is embodied in a set of behaviours which merge with identities at the most intimate subjective level. Teaching professional practice skills while simultaneously encouraging students to think critically about the systems they are working within could be viewed as a strategy that addresses systemic inequality by making continued creative practice after graduation possible for marginalised individuals whilst resisting this instrumentalisation. Art organisations can also contribute to addressing structural inequality in the sector by implementing positive action measures to address disadvantages, different needs, and/or encourage applicants from marginalised individuals. Providing reasonable adjustments and access bursaries for disabled artists and art workers during recruitment, as well as throughout their time with the organisation, would also support these graduates. Simplifying application processes for advertised roles and providing explicit marking criteria will greatly reduce application labour, something our interviewees flagged as a contributing to burnout, disillusionment and reduced confidence in their abilities. Recent sectoral studies include an Industrious 2023 inquiry, structurally F-KED, the Uncultured's 2023 survey Open Doors, and Unlimited's 2023 report Nothing for Nothing, have drawn attention to the fact that voluntary labour is propping up the UK contemporary art sector, and all highlighted the pressure many early career artists and art workers feel to work for free. This was prominent in our own findings, as was the clear advantage this gave students and graduates who were able to undertake unpaid work. Ending voluntary labour and committing to pay artists and art workers fairly is vital for ending elitism in the sector and addressing structural inequality, as it pertains to socio-economic status. Drawing up contracts which clearly outline what artists are being paid for and providing payment schedules in advance, as well as production budgets up front, would also mitigate the financial precarity cited by many of our interviewees as a main factor in their decision not to continue working in the sector, as would eradicating zero-hour contracts and providing more long-term roles. Many interviewees felt that there were a lack of graduate opportunities available, either due to fierce competition or a shortage of opportunities in their locale. Funding bodies can work to address this through decentralising funding allocation. In saying this, we are not arguing for a reallocation of funds or the defunding of organisations in major cities, many of whom are already struggling with financial insecurity, but a commitment to provide targeted funding for individuals and organisations in areas that are currently underfunded or geographically isolated. There should also be serious consideration given to how the current modules of individual project funding can be reformed beyond a project-by-project basis, moving towards more long-term solutions in order to end precarious working conditions for early career artists. These are actions that align with both Creative Scotland and Arts Council England's strategic priorities, which outline a commitment to supporting and developing the arts through advocating for fair work and equality, diversity and inclusion, and recognise the role that culture can play in building the identity and prosperity of places, creating stronger communities and inspiring change. By supporting artistic experiment and risk, direct funding gives artists control over how and what they make, providing equality of opportunity and contributing to a healthy balance of power in visual arts infrastructures. It also enables artists to pursue and hone a particular way of working, providing a bridge to high quality opportunities which further their careers and develop their practice, making it more sustainable. This nurturing of individual practitioners is ultimately an investment in the future of the UK contemporary arts sector, as it encourages innovation and growth in the creative economy.